Thursday, Southern Ontario sports fans. Thank you so very much for checking out the Sportsline podcast. I'm Bubba O'Neill. Hey, even without knowing it, CHCH social media specialist Amanda Pope just informed me that we have surpassed the 50 podcast mark and our audience is growing. So, in addition to thanking all of you, remember to tell your pals, share your favorite conversation shorts, and keep liking and subscribing because, heck, it's all for free and we certainly do appreciate you. On this day, a down-to-earth true lover of the sport of baseball, folks, broadcaster Mike Wildner has certainly done it all. Play-by-play, analyst, pregame, and he hosted the can't-miss Jays Talk postgame program in its heyday. Prior to that, he put in his time with the Watertown Indians of the New York Penn League, the Eastern League's Hardware City Rock Cats in Connecticut, and local folks, believe it or not, check this out, the Welland Pirates. Currently, he's writing for the Toronto Star, and he's talking about the sport on his Deep Left Field podcast. Mike Wildner, so pleased that you've joined us on the Sportsline podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know, it's been an amazing career and just being able to see so much of the things that you have done. You know, like every Major League Baseball player, you drove to the games, you rode the buses, you put in your time to accomplish your baseball dreams. What is it about baseball that makes it your passion?
I mean, how much time you got? It's you know, it's the great, I've said it many times, it's the greatest game ever created by anyone in the history of anything. So, that sums it up, I think, really well. I grew up, you know, at a great time to be in Toronto and be a baseball fan. I grew up listening to this guy, Tom Cheek, on the radio, and that really helped instill a passion in me. And, you know, nothing is ever as good as it was. Whether it's sports or music or pop culture or anything like that, as it was when you were 12 years old. And when I was 12 years old, the Blue Jays were just moving into that 11-year run from 1983 to 1993, where they had a winning record every year, where they were in a playoff race every year but one, and where they won 5 division titles and 2 World Series. So that was a great time to get into it, and it was real easy to get into, you don't lose that.
You know, over the 2 to 3 decades of covering the majors, you just brought up one. You certainly made multiple connections. I'm gonna think the likes of Bob Elliott, Richard Griffin, Tom Cheek, to name a few. Got any funny stories or any special moments?
I mean, so many, right? And so many of them surround Tom Cheek and the couple of years that I got to work with him before he got sick, and that was just, you know, an absolute dream come true to be in that broadcast booth with Tom in 2002 and 3, and the time in 2004 when he was working with us. But I mean, what I really loved about him was his sense of humor and his sense of mischief. He was so wonderful to me, and I don't know, for some reason took a liking to me, and I appreciated that a lot. But he, one thing that jumps out is that he always was impressed with how much I knew about kids on the way up, minor league prospects and young players in the game, to the point that once we were talking on a pregame show, and he asked me how that kid, Jose Jimenez, was doing. And he was talking about St. Louis, I think. But there was a young pitcher in just starting out in the major leagues who pitched for Colorado named Jose Jimenez. And I was like kind of going back and forth in my head. Did he mean the Rockies? Do I correct him on the air? What's happening? And then I remembered that there was also this stand-up comedian in the 50s who had a character named Jose Jimenez. And while I was going back and forth in my head and sort of stalling, I saw Tom like start to crack a smile that he couldn't hold back. And I just said, "You made that up, didn't you?" And he like started laughing. And, you know, it was incredible. And I remember, too, the day, Tom Cheek Day at the ballpark, where they put him up on the level of excellence. And he didn't know that that was going to happen. And we were in the dugout before the game, before the ceremony started and all that. He knew that he was, you know, getting a thank you. And he knew that, that they were going to commemorate his streak of 4,306 consecutive regular season games that had ended that June when he left for his father's funeral. But he didn't know about the level of excellence. And he was sitting on the Blue Jays bench in the dugout, and I was standing facing him. And over my shoulder, you could see in the outfield on the wall that there was a piece of the level of excellence that had been draped off. And he looked up and he saw it and he realized what was going to happen. And he just, he couldn't believe it. Like, legitimately, people talk about humility and people talk about, you know, not expecting to be celebrated or honored or whatever. He legitimately could not believe it. And he just, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like, no, they're not going to do that. And it was like, he thought he was a guy who just showed up for work every day. And he didn't think there was anything special about it. But that was an incredible moment as well.
Well, I think of the word. In fact, I never even heard of the phrase soundtrack of summer. And that's because of the likes of Tom Cheek for me. And I know, and many people in these parts know that Tom lived in Burlington. And I would see him as a, you know, sort of young broadcaster. And I was always amazed. First thing, and if you've never met the man, wow, was he a large man. Like, just a massive, tall man. A special person in Blue Jays lore. And I'll tell you, it really is unfortunate he's not with us anymore. And we say that all the time. But, boy, yeah, you just associate Tom Cheek with Blue Jays baseball. And, you know, we talk about some of those younger days, and at least for myself, and I think about yourself. And I brought this up earlier. But what's a young Mike Wilner doing in Welland, Ontario?
I'm trying to get into baseball, right? That was the thing. I was in first-year university. And I started working at the university radio station at the University of Toronto, CIUT, just out of nowhere. I went to university expecting to be, you know, go to law school or be an accountant like my father or something like that. But then on that orientation week, Frosh Week, when you're starting school, they had this big display of all the extracurricular things and all the clubs and stuff that you could participate in. And the radio station had a little booth there, and I went and I talked to them. I thought that would be cool. I'd never done anything like that. And I met with a guy named Tim Haffey, who was the sports director there at CIUT, who would later work at the Fan and do a lot of motorsports stuff, and a really good broadcaster. And, you know, he said, sure, you want to do sports updates like at 9, 10, 11 and noon, 2-3 days a week, start that way. And I was, yeah, fine. Let's do that. Let's see what happens. And the first day I went in was September 1988. And the first story I did on that Monday morning was Ben Johnson giving back his gold medal at the Seoul Olympics. He had won it the Friday before, and the whole scandal, the failed tests, had happened over the weekend. And he gave back that gold medal that Monday. That was the first story I did. And then as my first year went on, I got the opportunity to do a little hockey play-by-play and, you know, football games and basketball games. And I thought, this is fun. This is something I really want to do. But baseball is the passion, right? And there was no university baseball at that time in what was called the CIAU back then. So in the summer of 1989, I mean, I was going to school. I couldn't try to get into baseball for a full season. And there were two short season leagues at the time, which, you know, started in the middle of June and finished on Labor Day. And one of them was the New York Penn League, and one of them was the Northwest League out in, you know, Washington State and Oregon. And I don't think there was a team in Vancouver then. There is now. And there was no internet back then, so I had to go to, like, Metro Ref and go to the library and find out where all these teams were, what all these teams were. So I cold called every team, every short season team in the minors, in the New York Penn League and in the Northwest League. Yeah, and, you know, in the Penn League, there was Welland, there were, Hamilton had a team, St. Catharines had a team, there was a team in Niagara Falls, New York as well. And the only one that got back to me was the Welland Pirates. And they said, look, we're on, we do 30 games, I think, out of the 72 on See How Radio 1470 in Welland. Pete Marino was going to be the play-by-play guy, but they didn't have a second chair. So he said, I wish I could remember the name of the assistant GM, whoever it was, who told me, send us a tape of you doing baseball and we'll get back to you. And so I remember calling a couple innings into a tape recorder off a TV in my grandparents' house when I was 19 years old. I sent it off to Welland, and they said, sure, come be our number two guy. We're not going to pay you, but come do it. And so I did, and I did 30 games with Pete Marina, and that was the beginning.
That's an amazing story. I mean, and it's just, I mean, this is no different than a baseball player, right? I mean, grinding it out in
less money.
Well, I guess, I mean, especially you didn't get paid, but the fact that you got to grind it out, and, like, I mean, baseball is unlike any other sport where you're low A, high A, double A, triple A. Maybe you get a break to the majors, and certainly you worked all the way up. And as I said, I mean, you've done so much at that professional level with the Blue Jays, working on the Fan 590. Really, a part of our baseball lives in terms of. In the Blue Jays. And, you know, I think of the Maple Leafs, and, you know, for many years, at least, especially me getting into the business, Andy Frost did the Maple Leafs postgame show, which was always so entertaining. You had the opportunity to do Jays Talk, which was, like I said off the top, can't miss baseball. And I hate to say it, especially after a loss. What was that experience like?
Well, first of all, nobody calls a radio show after a win. Nobody calls a radio show to say they're happy and things are going well. It just doesn't happen like that. Yeah. But yeah, I love Andy Frost. I loved him when he was a DJ on Q107 and met him a few times. He's just a wonderful man. And he had some heavy lifting to do on that Leafs postgame show as well. Look, this is what happens when you're dealing with teams that don't succeed at the ultimate level, right? With the Leafs not making the playoffs for, what was it, 10, 12 years in a team, in a league where more than half the teams make the playoffs. That's just wild, especially in a market like this. And with the Blue Jays, you know, it was a lot more difficult to make the playoffs in baseball. It remains more difficult in baseball than in hockey, but it's easier now. But, you know, for the, I hosted Jays Talk for 17 years, and for 15 of those years, they were, I mean, never even in a pennant race in mid-September. They weren't even playing. We were talking about meaningful September baseball. That was all we were looking for, was meaningful September baseball, and we didn't get it for, you know, the first 13 seasons that I hosted that post-game show. It was always fun. It was always interesting. I feel like at the beginning, you know, I was sort of I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I tried my best to change the conversation and educate and entertain. And, you know, I think I was the first person who ever mentioned on base percentage on a Blue Jays broadcast. And I was, you know, I talked about how pitcher wins really don't mean anything, and RBIs are more of a team stat than a player stat, and all that stuff that's just sort of commonly accepted now. I was the first one to talk about on the radio in Toronto, and I guess across Canada. So that was fun. And, you know, callers, look, you're the first line when people are upset and emotional about a loss. And I think a lot of the entertainment value that came out of the show was just me challenging listeners challenging people who called in to defend their opinions. It was as simple as that. You know, a lot of people call and just want their thoughts to be validated as whether they're tethered to reality or not, let's say. So, you know, someone would call and say something, you know, state something as fact that just wasn't. And I would stop them and say, oh, hold on, that's not true. This is what really happened. They didn't like that. Or someone would just call and want me to validate their anger and want me to agree with them that all this is terrible and this is, you know, horrible and you know, season's over on April 18th or whatever. And I wouldn't validate those ideas. And I would, you know, I would, instead of saying, yeah, I would say, well, why do you think that? Or how could you possibly say that, you know, with 140 games left, a season is over, or even at the All-Star break, you know, I started like right around in my first few years, the Houston Astros were under 500 at the All-Star break 2 years in a row and made the playoffs both those years. So, you know, that was right front of mind. And for everyone everyone wants to be, well, not everyone, sorry. A lot of fans think that being negative makes them seem smart, and it doesn't. And a lot of people also want to be able to tell you that they knew it before it happened. So the sooner you can, you know, you can be a predictor of doom, the smarter you can tell everybody that you are. Say, hey, I knew in May that it wasn't going to happen, you know. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of these people just made these terrible predictions and said how horrible everything was and then said, I hope I'm wrong. And that, you know, I have a psych degree and I put it to good use over the 17 years of doing that show. But that sentiment is exactly it. People want to be right. People want to be happy. And if they're not going to be happy, at least they want to be right. So if you say this is terrible, everything's going to be awful and I can't stand anything and this is horrible and why are you watching because they're not going to make the playoffs and it's going to be horrible, I hope I'm wrong, then if you're wrong, you get to be happy because the team that you say you support is doing well. If you're not wrong, then you get to say that you were right. And I think that's what a lot of the post-game callers on any sports radio get to do. And that's, you know, those are the sort of things I fielded. But like I said off the top, nobody calls a radio show to say everything's great and I'm happy and this is terrific. So, yeah, it was always a lot more feisty after a loss. I know I'm going on too long, but I'll say this. I remember listening to talk radio, listening to sports radio growing up and, you know, before I got that job at the Fan. And I remember when phone lines were open that there were often hosts who would take a call and the caller would begin with this sort of outlandish statement. Right? Completely wrong, not based in facts at all.
Trade Dave Steve.
Well, not even that. I mean, that's one thing, right? I had, you know, I had a lot of those sorts of calls. And I'm sure people are still angry at me 15 years later for saying it was a dumb idea to like trade Vernon Wells for Tyke Redmond or whatever it was. But a lot of those hosts would hear those thesis statements, right, that were completely made up and not true and wrong, and just say, uh-huh, and let the caller continue. And I thought, I'm never going to do that. I don't want to do that. I'm not going to accept something that's just bananas. I'm going to make people defend their opinions. And turns out people don't like that very much.
You know, I'll tell you this, Mike, from a broadcaster standpoint, and especially younger broadcaster at that point in my life, and a baseball sports fan, I always appreciated the fact that, you know what, whether I agreed with you or not, you were always prepared. you're statistically prepared as well, too, and that you were willing to challenge the listener. And I think that's why it was always such great listening. And, yeah, you're right. When things are not going great, when things are going great, it's easy. It's the easiest job ever. But, yeah, when things aren't going well, yeah, the people are going to challenge you, and people are upset and want answers, even though sometimes they're just not answers until the next game. You know, and let's advance it to where we are right now, 22-23, the playoff failures for the Blue Jays. I mean, the Barrios move. I'll tell you one thing I've noticed, especially in this particular part of the province, and I don't know if it's maybe even Hamilton. They've got this kind of a love affair with Alex Anthopoulos and what he did, the GM from 2009 to 2015. And then there was the switch over to Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. There seems to be a tremendous divide. And I know Anthopoulos has gone on to be successful with the Braves and the Dodgers. Is it right or is it fair for Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro to kind of take they've been taking a lot of abuse over the last couple of years. Is it warranted?
Well, they've been taking a lot of abuse since they got the job. But
right.
But one thing that's important to remember, and, you know, obviously the firsthand knowledge of hosting that postgame show for years, right up until July 25th, 2015, everyone was complaining about Alex Anthopoulos. Everyone wanted him fired. Everyone thought he was doing a terrible job. The moves before the 2013 season didn't work out, trading for R.A. Dickey and making the big deal with the Miami Marlins. Josh Johnson was a huge bust, and Jose Reyes didn't work out. And John Gibbons was terrible, and everyone wanted him fired. And then the 2015 trade deadline happened, and everybody fell in love with Alex and fell in love with Gibby. And they should have, because, look, John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos were really, really, really good at their jobs. And Alex has shown it as he's left Toronto. But he showed it then. He was always, you know, willing to take those risks. And, you know, I've known him since he basically started working with the Jays in the early 2000s, and he knows his stuff. He's really good at it, and he understands what risks to take. And I was in his corner from the beginning. Sometimes you do things that don't work out, but very rarely did he do something that, you know, was just, you couldn't understand why that happened. And whether it worked out or not was a whole other thing. But the canonization of Alex Anthopoulos in Toronto and the GTA and, you know, across the country really was only a 2-month thing. Because again, before that trade deadline, when the Jays were under 500 in late July of 2015, everyone was saying he's got to go, and take Gibby with him. But we've seen, you know, over the course of the last decade, how good he is. So that's the situation. Look, Mark Shapiro, I believe his introductory news conference, I believe that Alex was named executive of the year during that news conference. And so the fact that Shapiro couldn't get Alex, to stay, the fact that he came in and immediately criticized the moves that gave the Blue Jays that boost in 2015 to have the best team they put together in over two decades, that got them on the wrong side of the fans right away. The fact that he, you know, they talked about this exhaustive search for a new general manager, and he wound up coming up with the guy that he had worked with in Cleveland for 20 years, who everyone knew before the process started was probably going to get the job. That put him behind the eight ball right away as well. And look, the things that they've done haven't worked, which is really what it comes down to. Ross Atkins, I don't think has been a terrible general manager. I think he's done some bad things. I think he's done some good things. I think the fact that they had a team that lost 95 games in 2019, and that was the extent of the rebuild. They've made the playoffs or been eliminated on the last day of the season every year since. They only had one horrible year. That speaks really, really well for the baseball operations department. But I think Shapiro is a little too corporate and a little too slick for a lot of the fans. which works well for Rodgers, but it doesn't work well for the people he's talking to. And I think that pretty much every time you put a microphone in front of Ross Atkins, it's a disaster. And that's what the fans are seeing. And then you have that Jose Berríos move that you mentioned last year in the playoffs, where the Jays just got too cute. And it feels like there's quite a bit of smartest guy in the room syndrome with this front office, and people don't like that. So, look, I think they've built a really good team. I think the fact that they haven't won a playoff game in 2 years is just a matter of luck for the most part. I mean, blowing that 8-1 lead in the sixth inning against Seattle, that's the greatest comeback in baseball playoff history. And a lot of things had to go wrong on the field for that to happen. And they did. And that wasn't a management thing. That was just really, really, really bad luck. Or if you're on the Seattle side, it's incredible clutch, whatever, that has never been seen in history. And as much as we can berate them for the scripted move to take Jose Berríos out of that game in Minnesota, no matter how well he was pitching, they didn't score a run in that game. So to say that move lost them the game is, you're saying what, it's going to go the 20 innings or whatever it's going to take for the Blue Jays to score a run? You can't win with zero. So yeah, the move was terrible, but they scored one run in two games in losing that series, and that's on the players. Nobody likes to blame players for things, but I will say that Shapiro and Atkins have not helped themselves as far as public perception is concerned. And that the level of hate that we're seeing is certainly not warranted for anyone, but I get why fans aren't big fans of theirs.
10-9 out of the gate so far, as we, you know, take a look at the series, you know, a series won against the Yankees, nearly a sweep. Interesting to see. Your thoughts on the early start? I know it's early, and everyone likes to throw that around. Your thoughts on that 10-9 record?
That's fine. It's fine. Look at the schedule right here. They played their first 10 games on the road against three teams that are expected to make the playoffs, and went 4-6, which is completely fine. You know, good teams are supposed to win series at home. Good teams are supposed to split with good teams on the road, and this is exactly what the Blue Jays have done. They've won all their series at home. They've lost 2-3 game series to the defending American League champion and the team that, until they came to Toronto, had the best record in the major leagues. And they split a series with a team that's expected to make the playoffs. So nothing wrong with that. This is how playoff teams are made, right? Win your series at home, hold your own on the road, which means winning series against bad teams and splitting series against good teams and losing series against good teams. That's how it works. And the starting pitching was bad the first two trips through the rotation. Now it's very good. The last trip through, I think the rotation had an ERA of 1. The hitting is starting to come around a bit. It's been okay, except for that series in Houston where it was just disgusting. But it's been fine, and, you know, it's fine. I get why people say, well, why can't we be the team that starts 16-3 every year? Why does every year have to be like, yeah, you're around 500 in April? I totally understand that. It would be nice. Everybody sort of forgets that last year they started 18-9. But again, that's not sort of the blow the doors off start that every team seems to get, or one team seems to get every year, but it never seems to be the Blue Jays. But 10-9 is fine. Look, and if they go 3-4 on this road trip, that's fine too. It's not great, but it's good enough, and it's probably going to get you to the playoffs.
I feel like the pitching has been pretty solid. I mean, we've been a little mystified at Kevin Gausman, though he showed very well, I thought, on Thursday, 6-4 loss. I mean, I'd put that on the bullpen. I think Bassett had the slow start, but again, I feel like he's just a pro, and again, seeing him turn around, and Barrios, you have to be really impressed with. I mean, look at that ERA. I know it's early again, but the ace that we thought he was going to be when he was acquired from the Twins, he's really working out to be that guy.
Right, he is. And he and Yusei Kikuchi are both hopefully a lesson learned in overreaction. I don't think the lesson's been learned, but it should be that everyone wanted to run Jose Barrios and Yusei Kikuchi out of town after 2022 when they both had bad years. Though for Barrios, it was more like 7 really awful starts. And now they're the 2 best pitchers in this rotation. And you know, where would the Blue Jays be without them, and where would they have been without them last year as well? Bassett had 2 bad starts to start the year. He's had 2 great starts since. And Kevin Gausman just finished spring training, right? He had 1 start in spring, and it was the last spring training game. So he was way behind from the very beginning, and it showed in his first 3 starts. But Wednesday against the Yankees, 5 innings, really, really good. It was still 101 pitches over 5 innings, but he only gave up a run. He was terrific, and hopefully he can become that guy again that he was last year when he finished 3rd in Cy Young voting, and the Blue Jays will wind up with one of the best rotations in the league again, and that's without Alek Manoah, who's starting for Buffalo on Friday. And with right now, anyway, Yariel Rodriguez as the 5th starter, who wasn't on that list because he only had 1 start, but he was outstanding as well in his major league debut, and he's going to start Friday night in San Diego.
You just said the magic word to me, and this is kind of just an offset question with Alek Manoah. And again, I mean, the mysterious, I don't want to call falling apart, but what's happened to him, whether it's his head, whether it's the mechanics, still trying to work it all out, right? And we've seen him with some side session stuff. We've seen him go down to the minors. But the thing that seems weird to me, why is he with the team right now? Like, shouldn't he be in Buffalo working on all those things that need to be worked on to get him back to that all-star status? I mean, it looked like he was even chirping one of the players from the Yankees yesterday. Why is he there?
For the same reason that Danny Jansen and Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson were there for the entirety of this last homestand, while they were on the injured list, and except for the days when they were actually playing in Buffalo. Buffalo's so close, right? It's right around the corner. It's an hour and a half from the Dome. So why not spend as much time as possible in Toronto working on those things with the major league coaching staff, as opposed to trying to do them in the facilities in Buffalo, as nice as they are? They were upgraded when the Jays moved there in 21. They're way nicer in Toronto. There's way more stuff they can do here, and they can do it with their coaches watching, and they can still feel kind of like they're a part of the team, and that's absolutely why they're here. I know a lot of people seem to have a problem with Manoah being here. Nobody said anything about Jansen and Swanson and Romano when they were here and also on the injured list. But that's why. And he threw aside on Wednesday with Pete Walker watching. I got a column out of it that will be in the Toronto Star on Friday. And Manoah's actually on Deep Left Field this week, the podcast that is out there already, episode 186. Alek Manoah is on it, and we had a wonderful conversation, really, you know, deep and revealing, and talked about a lot of the stuff that happened last year. But yeah, that's why he's in Toronto, because the Blue Jays are taking advantage of the fact that their AAA team is so close that you only have to go for the day if you're rehabbing, if you're a pitcher, and come back and work here.
Fair comment. It just seemed weird, and you certainly cleared that up for me. Okay, pitching taken care of. Hitting, to me, has been a tremendous disappointment, and there are several people I can point at. Again, early in the year, 19 games through, maybe I'm overreacting, but when I take a look at the team statistics, I mean, everything, at least on a Major League Baseball status, I mean, pretty much in, like, 20th place all over the place. I mean, do you expect that all of these numbers to improve?
Yeah, you do. You do. And you know, as much as you said 19 games in, a lot of people feel like it's 187 games in, right? Because the offense was really disappointing last year, too. So people feel like it's just sort of a continuation. But the truth of the matter is the offense was not this bad last year. It wasn't anywhere near this bad last year. They were top 10. I think in all the categories that you're showing right now, except for home runs, and they were 15th in runs scored. So they were getting on base, they were getting hits, they were hitting for a reasonable average, they just weren't turning it into runs, and it's because for the first 4 months of last season, they were absolutely miserable with runners in scoring position. They were really good in August and September, but we remember those first 4 months where it was just awful to watch. And it feels like a continuation of that. But I think we've seen some really good things, and we saw some really good things in this homestand. As far as the offense is concerned, I think they scored 5 runs or more in most of the games, the homestand, 4 runs or more in almost all of them. Still not where we want it to be and not where we expect it to be, but it is coming around. And I really liked what they did Tuesday against the Yankees and Carlos Rodon when they made him throw 101 pitches in 4 innings, which is just ridiculous. And that's the kind of approach you need to have against really good pitchers to be successful. And you know, it's worked a few times. And the Seattle Mariners came to town with 3 incredible starting pitchers going back to back to back in Luis Castillo and George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. And the Jays were all over Castillo and Kirby and made them look really pedestrian. Gilbert shut him down, but that's, you know, that's what he does. So I think that it's on the right track. I think we're going to see a better offense. I don't think we're going to see what we saw in 2021 or 22 when they were one of the best offenses in the game, but I think they'll do more than enough offensively to wind up being fine.
I don't like to single out because it is a team sport, but there is the big bopper and Vladdy Guerrero. And again, maybe this week we did see some positive things, but I don't know. I just feel like there's that off-speed stuff on the slide. Like, he just seems to be a little wild at the plate. Maybe sometimes his hitting, at least selection, at the pitches that he's going to swing at seem undisciplined. Am I wrong in saying that?
Some of those swings have looked terrible, right? He's swung at a few 2-strike breaking balls that were way off the plate and looked bad, and that looks awful. And I think Vladdy set the bar incredibly high with that year in 2021 when he hit 48 home runs and he should have been the MVP and he had an OPS over 1,000 and he was 21 years old. And we all thought that this is it, right? This is what he's going to be, this or better, for the rest of his career. And it hasn't happened. He's still been very good. He's still been a hitter that every team would want to have in the middle of their order. But we're disappointed because it hasn't been what it was in 21. But I do think that, I mean, we all know it's in there because we've seen it. But I think that expectations need to be tempered for Vlad. He's not going to be someone who puts up 1,000 OPS every year. He's not going to be someone who flirts with 50 home runs every year. But he is going to be someone who has tremendous power, who is a really, really good hitter, and who will be one of your team leaders, if not your team leader, in home runs and runs batted in and OPS every year, like he was last year. He led the team in homers and RBIs, and I think he was 3rd in OPS behind Brandon Belt and Bo Bichette. But, you know, I think approach is a fun buzzword that everybody likes to throw around, and plate discipline. You know, Vladdy takes his walks. And a lot of times those wild swings at a two strike pitch off the plate happen on the sixth or seventh pitch of what had been a really good at bat up to that point. He's always going to be a lightning rod because everyone expects him to hit a home run every time he comes to the plate, and no one can do that. Now there's a difference between doing that and hitting 211, which is what's happening right now. But at the end of the year, you'll look up and his numbers will be either leading the team or top two, top three on the team. And chances are, right up there in the top 20 or 30 of the league.
Top of the order. What about Springer? You feel the same way?
I don't know if I feel the same way. I like what I see out of George Springer. Talking about that game on Tuesday against Carlos Rodon, I think George Springer saw 30 pitches in five trips to the plate, which is just silly. He did not have a good year last year, and you don't often see people improving from 32 to 33 or 34 or however old he is. But I don't think he's washed or done by any means. I do think that the Blue Jays last year, mid-season, took him out of the leadoff spot, weren't afraid to make that move, which, you know, George Springer, it can be difficult to do that. You know, when Vernon Wells struggled, the Blue Jays never took him out of the middle of the order because he was Vernon Wells. He was supposed to hit third or fourth. George Springer's supposed to hit first, but the Blue Jays bumped him down to fifth last year in the middle of the season when he was struggling. So if that happens again, it'll happen again. I don't think he's the all-star slugger that he was when they brought him over here, but he's in the fourth year of a six-year deal. And he was an all-star last year, as it turned out. But when I think of Springer, I think of him as solid, good, strong, but top of the league, not anymore.
You know, you talk about your Deep Left Field podcast and your ability to talk about the team. You're still writing about the team. And, you know, hey, let's be honest here. I mean, I work at Sportsnet, as you know, for a dozen years. And you've got people to answer to. I think that's fair to say. But now kind of detached from that sort of Rogers ownership unit, do you feel like you can kind of be a little bit more expressive, more talk about the team from a different perspective than you had to when you were with the Fan 590 and Sportsnet?
Was I ever not expressive? I mean, did anybody ever say that about me over, you know, when I worked for Rogers for the radio? Look, I worked for Rogers for 25 years, and the last 19 of them was after they bought the Blue Jays. Nobody ever said anything to me, ever, about what to say or what not to say, or you know, stay away from this, or never. I never felt handcuffed. I never felt like there was anything that I couldn't do because I was working for the company that owned the team. So no, I don't feel like there are any shackles off now because there were never any shackles on. Mm-hmm. But my, I like to come at things, from a perspective of giving people the benefit of the doubt if they've earned it. If they haven't, then not. But remembering, and this is something that I talk about a lot on the podcast, remembering how hard this game is to play, and this came up a lot in the conversation with Alec Manoah that's on the current episode, that you're talking about people and not laundry. I know that a lot of fans like to think of the teams they cheer for and the players they cheer for as just the laundry that they're cheering for, and that there aren't actual human beings inside it. But my perspective has always come from the fact that the game is really hard. Hitting is really hard. There's never been a hitter in the history of the game of baseball who hasn't gotten out more often than not. it's really, really, really hard. And you know, I get people talking about swing decisions and approaches and stuff. And you're talking about having a fraction of a millisecond to make a decision as to whether you're going to swing at a pitch or not. When you watch a game on TV, it looks incredibly easy. And it's how could you possibly swing at that pitch? How could that umpire possibly miss that pitch? And you're talking about something that's, you know, an eighth of an inch off the plate, or something that's coming in at 98 miles an hour, or something that, you know, is coming in at 87 with a massive break that until it gets to within 10 feet of the plate looks like it's coming in straight at 98. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. And these players make it look so easy, but it's not. And that's what my perspective has always been and will always be. And will I call somebody out if he does something dumb, or if, you know, there's something that's within a player's control that is done incorrectly? Sure, absolutely. I always have, and I always will. But, you know, why did he swing at that slider? The thing I will often think about is, well, what if you were a fan of the guy who struck him out? You know, then your question isn't, why did he swing at that slider? Your opinion is, what an incredible pitch that guy just threw. So sometimes try to think about it through that other lens, and it'll explain a lot.
Well, we certainly look forward to it. I know me in particular, and I'm sure our viewers and listeners right now, I can't wait to listen to you sitting there with Alek Manoah, because it really, on your podcast, because I'm always amazed, and this could cross all sports, when people hit a certain level and when it just kind of drops out somewhere for what we would seem to be like unknown reasons, and you're trying to get back to being that guy or that woman. Like, I'm always amazed at that. So I certainly look forward to listening to your podcast. And I'm going to put up a board there, too, on that podcast, so a lot of our listeners know where to catch it, especially if you're a big-time Blue Jays and baseball fan. So, Mike Lake, again, thank you for joining us. I hope this is the first of many times that you can join us and break down the sport that I know you love so much, and that I'll tell you, there's something about Blue Jays baseball, especially when they're on a run. There's nothing like it, especially in the summertime, you know, watching that baseball game, getting down to what is hopefully an improved Rogers Center. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for thinking of me. This is a great, great chat. I really enjoyed it.
Well, we look forward to another one. Thanks again, Mike. Well, the week is just about coming to a conclusion. One more to come on the Sportsline podcast for the week. And as we always say, if you know of an extra special athlete, team, or event that deserves our attention, we do want to hear from you. Please smash that thumbs up, like, and subscribe button. And if you do have a comment, please do, because we appreciate your feedback. For the amazing people that make the Sportsline podcast possible, thank you so very much, and we'll see you on Friday.